Okay, I really do have to thank Toshi for a well-balanced presentation. We can see from APNIC that there was a substantial amount of pressure generated from this incident in the JPNIC and the JP community, and we can really only offer our apologies and a commitment to move forward from this. So I should really point out, and you can see the overview up there, but I should point out that while we're in the DNS SIG, we're really tempted to think of this issue as a failing of DNS. To be clear, DNS, in which I mean the servers and the service, has been running without fault for many years. There was no failure of protocol. The answers came back as expected. The issue was a break in process, a break in a data generation process. And in a perfect, simple world, it wouldn't have happened. But unfortunately, we know this is not a perfect, simple world. What you can see there is our current system. We have our registry. Oh, this has gone funny again. Let's pick a nice pointer. Okay, you can see the registry DB there. We have some allocation data into a registry generation process. We have the DNS generation process, a database, a DNS database, publishing zone files out to an APNIC master DNS server. And we also have APNIC whois, the RIR and NIR shared zone set, as well as lameness checks. It's not particularly simple. When we think about it, we've got six different generic data sources that need to be factored in. And of these six data sources, one can be further broken down into five RIRs, three NIRs, and various other little pieces. All of these areas are really participating in the shared zone management process. So some of the more astute of you might already start to see some of the problems that are sitting there. So what actually happened? Well, this thing keeps changing. Maybe it's just me. Okay. We applied a vendor-provided security patch to maintain the security and integrity of our servers. Unfortunately, that broke registry generation. So when we actually push out zone data, or when we receive zone data from the shared or ERX space, as well as the shared zone structures from the NIRs, we actually have to verify that they are actually able to give us that data. They're authorized to do something with that data, and we can therefore push it out. So we have to verify that somewhere. So we generally verify it from the registry database. Unfortunately, because we broke it, or it broke, should I say, we were unable to verify it. So the shared zone information failed to publish. That also meant that the shared data failed to go to Aaron. So I should point out that no ordinary members were affected by this, okay? So when that shared data came out, it was essentially as if the data was being withdrawn. We're basically withdrawing or undelegating records. So DNS servers were still working, they were still fine, they were happy, they were answering, but they were answering saying, nope, I have no NSRR set for you. Before I go on to the next slide, and I really do want to point out that APNIC has been thinking about the DNS system for a long time. Both before, in fact, well before this issue occurred, and even more so after this issue occurred. And we've isolated a few more potential future problems that might crop up. I wonder if you can spot them. Okay, I don't think I need to talk to this slide. Most of you can see the intention there. I think the important thing is, so what are we really going to do about this? We have come up with a new system. Now, the first thing to note is that we're actually going to change the way that the NIRs and possibly in the future members interact with us. You can see here that we're taking a look and we've in fact already implemented a prototype for XML web services. So we have the NIR, possibly the RIR, and members doing zone delegation updates over that. So what are the benefits there immediately? Well, we have immediate response for success or failure. Secured encrypted transaction. Well, we'll over web, HTTPS, excellent medium. Edge-based permissions model. That means we find out if they can or can't do it right there. No waiting 10 minutes, half an hour, straight away, know if it's not going to happen. We're merging data into consistent structures. Okay? Data change will only actually happen when it's instigated by the member or the NIR. So the data just sits there in the database. It doesn't change. It only changes when an update occurs. Well, except lameness policy, okay. But that's more of a flagging to say that this is a valid zone or not. We have a much simplified generation process because of that. You saw in a couple of slides ago that we had issues about race conditions, we had consistency statements from different sources. Very simple. One DNS database, one generation process, one publish space. Very simple. Also, Whois becomes a read-only view for DNS. So, benefits to the community. Well, stable generation of DNS, and that's what we're all about. We really need to make sure that happens. It's been pointed out that reverse DNS, whilst not as far as I can recall in any RFC space that says it must be there, is fast becoming an operational critical service. That basically means people are relying on it because it's there. And because that reliance is there, it then becomes a critical service. So we're always going to use the last known good data, always. Secure and consistent update mechanism. Certificate-based access controls. Okay, we tend to be fairly blasé about security, unfortunately, despite the fact that we're in the IT world and we have that many IT security conferences occurring. People still use Telnet for managing routers, and they still like to send passwords via email. So certificate-based access controls, we know who you are. Encrypted transaction, you can be sure that the discussion between you and us is encrypted. And it's not going to be replayed. It's not going to be intercepted, unless it's the CIA, maybe. Sorry, I won't offend too many US people here. It's scalable and extensible. Well, it's XML, so we've written the schema for this. We can do one zone in one atomic update, or we can do thousands of zones. It's just a nice stream of XML. And we have future support for DNS developments, like, oh, maybe DNSSEC, perhaps, if it is accepted in the Asia-Pacific community. Transition. Well, the focus here at the moment is on the NIR. None of the ordinary members' data was affected, so right now we're really going to concentrate on the NIR space to make sure we can give those guys the service that they do deserve and their community deserves. So we're obviously going to gather some NIR feedback, and in fact, a couple of days ago we had a meeting with the NIRs, and we've already showed them a glimpse of this. So we're going to gather their feedback from this and progress this to production. Obviously, you know, that's not just as easy as snapping my fingers and it's done. I wish it were. We're going to convert to the NIR to using XML over web, and where necessary. I actually think the NIRs are pretty smart people. They have quite a good history and a very able technical body. We'll assist where it's necessary. And in future, member. Well, we need to adjust the tools for member use. Because this is at the moment focused for the NIR, it's not particularly a nice front end, so to speak. We'll obviously have to communicate a cutover date as per normal APNIC process of the way we do things. We'll make some tools available to the member. And we can migrate the email update members to those tools using either my APNIC or an XML client that allows them to push their updates. And whois becomes read-only for DNS. So I've actually just very briefly rushed through this because I don't want to chew up Ed's time because I know he's dying to come up here and tell us about EPP. But while I'm here, let me just spin over to another screen. Sorry. What does a prototype look like? Okay, you can see we've got a development server currently running. It's using the REST model. If you're aware of REST, it's representational state transfer, I believe. Basically takes the URL, in this case RDNS IPv4.202.12.29, which happens to be the APNIC network, and converts that into a GET, basically. The scripts sitting behind that give us back this wonderful piece of information. As you can see, it's HTTPS using my certificate, so it knows who I am. The transaction between my laptop and that server, encrypted. The interesting thing here is that if we do a show source, look, we have some XML. We actually mark it up a little bit with a style sheet, so that's what gives you the nice stuff, the little crosses and things like that. But right there, we have the XML. We can see that the zone name is there, the space is there, the authority is there, APNIC. It's currently using version 1. We have a modified date and name servers, all in a nicely constructed set. Now, if I were to maybe remove that one and put in that one, and then if I were to publish changes, that would go straight into our database. Unfortunately, it won't because my certificate knows who I am and doesn't think I'm authorized to do that. So, that's as simple as it is, and I think as simple as it could possibly get. Let me go back to my main slides. Sorry for the spinning. These Macs are wonderful things. Okay. So, what sort of schedule do we have? Well, unfortunately, it's pending work assessment. Why is it pending work assessment? Well, it takes a fair bit of work to transition from what we have now to what we're going to have. It's not a two-day process by any means, and we are really going to be focusing on the NIRs. So, we expect to be able to make an announcement by APNIC 22 on the future of this, how long it's going to take and when it can be given to the membership. We expect the NIRs to have it well before that, obviously pending their cooperation. So, are there any questions?
Excuse me. This is not question, but request.
Yes.
The reverse, IP address reverse lookup sometimes very slow because of the name server lookup go to the forward lookup and then go back to reverse lookup. And this kind of lookup continues several times. So that putting NIM server in the reverse zone itself will reduce the lookup times in the DNS. So that I think in your registration page, registration system, the name server for the inside zone name and the GRU A record can be registered.
We've actually considered putting the GRU record there. However, I think there's a bigger discussion at a wider community about the issues about putting GRU records into the ARPA tree.
Yes, there is a DNS draft in Bailiwick name servers required, and it has been subject to different points of view. Not everyone feels as confident that this is necessarily a good thing, but if the wider community did reach a point where it was considered best standard practice, we would obviously reconsider what we were going to do. But at this stage, we don't yet have GLU support in our registry systems, and we're kind of holding back from that.
Mike Grenoy Garnett. We use the PGP email to do Whois updates for contact info. Is that going to be dropped completely?
We're talking about DNS here, so if you're doing updates to DNS, that will probably...
We probably wouldn't, because not a registry per se, but...
Right. I probably can't speak for the future of the interactions for DNS updates, or in fact Whois updates, what we call Whois updates at this point in time, but I would expect some changes.
Right.
Sorry, I can't be any more precise than that.
That's fine.
Yeah.
This may be a detail, but when you send XML with XSS style sheet to a browser, you obtain very different results among the browser. Did you experience problem?
Especially
with a very common browser?
That doesn't work under Safari. It works under Mozilla fairly well, and it works under Microsoft okay. We're aware of the XSLT style sheet issues, but keeping in mind that right now this is a prototype in demo space, and what we're really looking at is the underlying functionality here that is getting information in a sensible fashion from the NIRs and from the members.
We had almost exactly that experience of the apparent effect of showing a browser-based tool when we demonstrated this in-house. People immediately thought about browser interactions and were saying, could you make the crosses bigger and could you move the fields up? And we were saying, no, that's a demonstrator of AJAX. That's showing about client-side AJAX embedded behavior. What we're trying to show is the source, the show source and the XML tagging. That's the real part that matters to us. And we've developed a Perl application that was 40 lines long of Perl with a include statement to get an XML parsing library, and it fetches a URL, dumps it as plain text, you make a one line change, you feed it as input, and it does the update. And we actually don't think that the style sheet based tool will be in any sense what we expose. If we ran a web interface into our system, we would probably be mediating that in another form of web design and then using XML at the back end to talk to something as middleware. We have some architectural reasons for doing that. But yes, the problem of the style sheets and browser conformance and behavior, we were very aware that there are problems there. We still think that it's good technology, and we're very interested in using that as a way of enhancing our services. And an observation here is that the relativities of browser use in the community that we are in is very different to general public use. It tends to be more about Safari than IE, for instance, the question that arose, what works and what doesn't work. So it is an important issue, but the primary message is XML tagging and SSL secured identities to give authority to make update. Well spotted that problem.
Another web service question. Did you consider, beside your this interface, did you consider SOAP or XML RPC? Or yes, no, maybe, yes. Why?
We considered a few things, but it came down to the way our basic framework at this point in time works. So we're actually considering the future, and we're actually considering the MyAPNIC project and the way it behaves. And the REST model actually fit better in longer-term space for the merging of the technology.
In particular, SOAP, BEEP have an extremely high transaction cost. It's not atomic operations, datagram-like behavior. You establish a heavyweight connection which has quite high overhead, and you do something and then you tear it down again, and it just did not feel comfortable to us. It's not to say there is no value in that in the sense of a session layer, but it REST, the compelling simplicity of four primitive operations focusing on a namespace and use of HTML, HTTP as a ubiquitous transport, worked better for us. That was really an initiative more in the software group, I would say, that they have been fighting for a very long time about what is an appropriate transport, and they just couldn't make SOAP or BEEP or BXXP work comfortably for them. It just didn't fit. Do you think this is running counter to the rest of the world, or do you feel this is a general trend?
Because we use SOAP in production, and the main problem, as I see it, is a problem of interoperability. It's as soon as you start, when you just send the character strings and use very basic operation, it works. But when you start to do funny things with SOAP or sending exotic data types, exotic being simply a date, a time, a thing like that, you have a lot of problems because you have a registrar. We use a SOAP library for PHP. It works with one version, not with the other, etc. So for me, the big problem with SOAP is this one. You have a lot of support problem with registrar.
Yeah, that was another thing we considered. We do have, obviously, in the Asia-Pacific community, multiple languages, and that there is still is the push for internationalized domain structures. So we really do need to be able to support multiple character sets, multiple everything. And we can encapsulate that extremely well with the REST model using XML. Any other or any further questions? Okay. I might as well just introduce Ed.